right now, I have in my possession one of the most powerful and most valuable commodities, your attention, and I hope I can keep it. Human attention today is the most sought after and also one of the most hardest things for anyone. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about advertisers or Hollywood or entertainers or YouTube stars or Instagram people or whatever. Everyone is hunting for human attention. And to capture human attention has become so wildly different. In this bit of conversation with Tim Kring, we're talking around really what the potential death of Hollywood, the potential death of TV could mean or could be. Because I actually ask a really stupid question, and that is trying to predict the future in 5 years. The future in 5 years for Hollywood, well, we toss around a few ideas, but at its very core, at its very essence, what we have to realize is that with the incredible intensity of new content, new ideas, you know, things like Forever Has Fallen coming out, you know, we're competing against everyone from Twitch through to the YouTube channel, through to blockbuster programming on TV, or you know, the next Wonder Woman movie that's coming out. To be able to capture human attention is extremely difficult, and it's going to become even more difficult into the future. And that's where you've got to start asking, what will happen to traditional entertainment? How will it evolve? How will it change? Because it has to change, it has to evolve, because people are evolving.
Well, how well do you think Hollywood executives, or, you know, the people who are making the decisions, how well do you think they actually know the fans and what the fans want and what value should be delivered to fans?
It's sort of more now, obviously. I mean, I think the fan culture, that sort of immediate dynamic feedback loop that I talked about, where fans can talk back to a, you know, when I first started making, you know, before the internet, that the audience literally did not exist for me. They were only a kind of binary thumbs up, thumbs down, Nielsen ratings, you know, the old sort of classic ratings of television. And that's all you knew of your audience. It was sort of like, I used to say, it's sort of like standing on a stage with bright lights in your eyes. You cannot see the audience, and you have no understanding of them. And suddenly, you know,
until the tomatoes start flying onto the stage, that's then you knew you're bombed.
Yeah. And now the tomatoes can be thrown a lot faster, and you can really understand. You know, one of the problems with the world that I work in, which is usually network TV, is what I'm traditionally worked in, is you make your show 2 and 3 months before the audience experiences it. So that when the audience reacts to something, you're on to something. You've moved on. You can't be really impacted by them. Mm. So your relationship with the audience is a little strange, because you can only a show cannot react immediately to an audience, and a show can react maybe season to season. Yeah. Can start, but I always found that the writer's room itself is a really interesting phenomenon. The writer's room is like a little microcosm in some ways for the fans.
How does that work? I mean, you've got like 4 or 5 people in the same room writing the same script. I've never actually seen
it totally depends. Every writer's room is different, every show is different. I've done multiple versions of it. Sometimes the writers sort of group write, but oftentimes you're assigned one episode, or you're assigned one story in an episode, that sort of thing. But you are, especially in a serialized show where there's you're carrying water from one story to the other all the time. The writers really have to be together and really, you know, you have to all be in lockstep. You all have to all break the story together. And I've noticed that over the years that the writer's room itself really mirrors the experience that the audience is going to have 3 months later when the show is on. So the writer's room itself will start to go, you know what? I think we went too far with that story. And I think these two characters, you know, we gotta break them up because they're not, that relationship isn't working anymore. Yeah. And, you know, and so when 3 months later, when the audience is watching the show and you're hearing exactly the same thing, like, you should break those two up. It's not working. And we're like, you know, everybody's like, yeah, we know. You'll just wait.
We're on it.
Yeah, we're already, we already had that same discussion 3 months ago. But it is interesting how a writer's room will really just kind of mirror the experience of the writer's room knows when you get it wrong. You know, they know when you get it wrong. They're like, man, we screwed that up. We shouldn't have gone that direction, you know, and they already know it, you know.
So where do you see Hollywood in about 5 years' time? I know that's a bit of a nonsense question.
It's a tough one. You get asked
that all the time, but
it is a, I mean, just because of the, like I said, like who would have known that Silicon Valley would come and just gobble up the entire industry, you know, 5 years. You wouldn't have been able to predict that 10 years ago. And now it's like, I do think that this COVID thing has accelerated a sort of digital, it's pushed the digital thing really quickly. And the whole idea of, I mean, I don't know that translates that much into like the big screen and like traditional storytelling, but just in the way we work, it's changed everything. You know, I don't know that people are going to be driving to an office quite the same way again. I do think that, like I said, this continued sort of vertical integration of big money, it seems to be hard to beat, hard to compete with. So I think that the Amazons and the Apples and the Netflixes and the Disneys, I think it's going to consolidate into those giant silos. In some ways that's very familiar because those of us who grew up in the traditional, you know, in Hollywood where there were, you know, six or seven major studios and there weren't a bunch of players. Mm. And all of a sudden, you know, 10 years ago before Silicon Valley showed up, you know, it used to be when I first started selling, I mean, myself as a writer out there, there were only five places where you could sell a show on television, you know.
Wow.
You had HBO and then you had the networks and, you know, that was it. And then suddenly there were 55 places, you know, and there was, you know, you could sell a show to the Home and Garden Network or to the, you know, to Bob's Network, you know.
Or even now with, you know, thanks to digitalization, with low barrier to entry, you can do it yourself.
Yes. And so my guess is there is going to be sort of two versions. There's going to be the big vertically integrated premier prestige kind of stuff. And each one of those is going to have their own lower tier thing as well, because to fill the coffers, you need to be able to have the premium stuff and the low end. But then the thing that I think the question inside your question that is actually more interesting to me is what happens to Hollywood as an audience that grows up not engaging with Hollywood comes of age. In other words, my son, who's 20 years old, the TV is a thing that's on the wall that he walks past, you know, on his way to the bathroom. You know,
yep, I mean, same with my kids.
Yeah, it's not really, and he would much rather get his content distributed to him by his friends and he would by any traditional silo, you know. And he's very happy to watch something on a 4-inch, 3.5-inch screen of his phone. And content for him can be a YouTube video that you and I would never in a million years find entertaining. And what happens to Hollywood when these people, when these, this demographic has already shunned them and is not interested in watching a 2-hour movie or, you know, or a 12 episode series, you know? Mm. So to me, that's the more interesting question. Where
and also the games industry as well. Don't forget the games.
Well, that, yes. Now. I mean, look at the audiences that for Twitch, for people watching people people watching people play games.
Yeah.
That's what passes as entertainment for so many people now.
Yeah, could you imagine going to a Hollywood studio and pitching this as an idea and saying, look, I think millions of people will want to watch people play games. And I'd be like, get out of here. I mean, there's no way. Yeah.
So predicting where Hollywood itself will go might be a little easier in terms, because I think the continuation of big spending of big television show. I mean, obviously the movies don't seem to want to come back. Mm-hmm. I mean, the classic go to the movies, spend money for a babysitter and park your car and buy your popcorn. Mm-hmm. That feels, I don't know how that's going to happen. I mean, I imagine those will be big events like going to the circus, you know?
Yeah.
When you do that, it'll be like going to Cirque du Soleil. You'll buy the t-shirt and you'll buy the, and you'll bring your kids and you'll, you know, you'll get the hats and all that stuff. You'll spend the money and all, and it'll be a big, giant, cool event. And I imagine there's some version of that for films. But when you have a 70-inch television screen and surround sound, and I don't know why you would pay all that money to go out and see that movie, you know?
And you can have Uber Eats deliver you wonderful food, and you've got your own wine and...
I don't know. Obviously there's no substitute really for sitting in a theater with other people, and that's still going to happen, but it feels like it's going to be more eventized. Mm. But the bigger question is what happens at the base level of entertainment? What does entertainment really become for people? And I do believe that this live, immersive, interactive, I think 5G is going to push that boundary in a really interesting way. You know, when you can do sort of real-time CGI on your phone, you know, imagine something like an IP like Heroes, where you're an office worker by day, but you can shoot laser beams out of your eyes and you can do all that on your phone and then share that content with your friends and challenge them and have a game and all that kind of stuff, you know? I think that phone is going to continue to be a pusher.
So thank you very much for listening. And don't forget, if you have not yet joined as a bounty hunter, please do. In fact, why am I saying please do? You should do it. If you don't do it, you're missing out on a lot of fun. We have these online escape rooms, experiences I guarantee you've never seen or even maybe even thought of before. What we're doing is very new, very different. It's a hell of a lot of fun, and it's a continuation of our journey as we go to Kickstarter. Until next time, take care and have fun. Bye-bye.